Welcome to Foves Are the Best People, a podcast exclusively devoted to the Australian band, The Foves. On the last episode, we journeyed back to 2001, with three quarters of The Foves clocking up live dates as pub rock, an outfit playing covers of classic late 70s, early 80s Oz rock numbers. We had a look at the Foves recording their follow-up to Thousand Yard Stare at Fortissimo Studios sometime in early 2002. While generally proud of the results, the production itself would not be recalled with any great enthusiasm by the group. The band had recorded with Chris Dickey, who had previously engineered Bigger Than Tina. The band may have been put off by his production technique, but had to concede that the ends may have justified the means. So, what about the songs themselves? As is our custom, we will review every track in much greater depth across later episodes. A quick summary. The album would contain 13 songs, the same as A Thousand Yard Stare, though the new release would boast a slightly longer running time. The album would also feature four Doctor songs, rather than two. The previous album contained songs about oddball Australian individuals, vividly, and sometimes hilariously, painting a picture of their idiosyncratic quirks and tribulations. The lyrics were paired with popalicious melodies, often incorporating retro keyboard parts. There would be keyboard, but it would be deployed more sparingly now. More an embellishment than a woven-in essential. Recording digitally, instead of tape, meant that spontaneous ideas could be incorporated or jettisoned just as quickly, like a harp, for instance, on LA 86. It's suitably vague and open-ended. It's brief and punchy, and that's intended. So you can apply it to your own life. If you lost your job or you're fucking another man's wife. Baby. The album begins with the rocky and reasonably rambunctious Insert Your Life. Unlike Uni Student, which began the previous album, there were no readily apparent synths on this track, which was later earmarked as a potential single. Coxie, in his patented deadpan delivery, riffs on how to churn copy in the most absurdly generalist way to attract the most clients or biggest audience. The lyrical subject matter of this song is a fantastic way to start an album. A driving rock song, starting with generalities and then getting more specific. The second track, Good Times Coming, is not a Doctor song.
What?
This is heresy for some fans. We make no comment here except to say that The Good Doctor doesn't have any rockers on this album.
Unlock my door, come through my window, find me lying on the floor, I cannot sleep, I need a breeze. I'm in the doldrums like a Portuguese ship without a sail.
If Footage Missing's opening track starts off the album with too much cynicism, then Good Times Coming succeeds in reeling that back a notch. The gentle number aims for sincerity and achieves it. Although not strictly an acoustic number, it has that feel. The singer urges us to hang on. The clouds will part soon. We are manifestly getting somewhere, no matter how futile it seems.
I'm your
One reviewer praised the momental build-up in the song and described Coxey's vocals as sounding slightly forlorn. It's either upliftingly optimistic or crushingly tragic, depending on how you choose to take it. The song was printed up as a single, but was junked. It most certainly would have been the first ballad to be released by the band as a single, save possibly for Charles Atlas Way. The next song, Yo-Yo Craze, is another tender moment.
Hula hoops and Rubik's cubes, the playing deck was mine. Sat down at the table, but fate dealt four instead of five.
The sensitive protagonist had just overcome his introverted ways, just about adjusted himself to coupledom, when he is romantically discarded. The reason for the break doesn't earn a mention by the songwriter, who instead catalogues a number of pop culture metaphors to describe his unexpected obsolescence. This is a beautiful song by any measure. Also, we have two songs in a row that perfectly lend themselves to acoustic reproduction on stage. One reviewer remarked, "Yo-Yo Craze has that Fauve sense of tragi humour bubbling up again, and it's what fans love them for, and largely the reason why others just can't grasp where they're coming from." That might be true, Lester Bangs, but you shouldn't say it.
You don't know how much you hurt me, like a handprint on a hypercolor shirt. My psyche wears your fingerprints, looking for a match down at Forensic.
Coming in at track 4 is finally Doctor's first song on the album, Ticket to the Big Time. It was called a straight-ahead rock cruiser in one street press article. Whether rightly or wrongly, it's a damn fine melodic tune incorporating jangly guitars. The song is ostensibly about letting down a friend on the rise to fame, neither of which Doctor is guilty of. It's shades Superstar by the Carpenters, shades the Pete Best story. Lyrical check. Are the words "and he got arrested" or "Andy got arrested"? What do you think? What did happen over in WA? Next, we come to Unsafe at Any Speed, perhaps the Archimedes crown on the album. The title comes from a famous 1966 OHS tome that implored seatbelts to be made compulsory in the US of A. Coxie has always been a bower bird for a great turn of phrase, and the words both scan and sing well as a catchy chorus.
Till the pigs got us over at the side of the road, I'll see your license, please. Drop and spread 'em, yeah, you heard me.
Vocals commence the song a la Charles Atlas or Understanding Chaos, getting maximum use across the song's modest 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Doug's drums are simply delicious. Whether he's using a piccolo snare or deploying more rim shots than usual, the tone is all warm and Ringo. The Sticksman even makes the end of each verse resemble a car indicator and windscreen wiper combo. And then, arguably, one of the most effective and affecting sing-along refrains in the Fove's career, all over a simple Weezer-esque fuzz chorus. We then pass through a second verse, which adds a cold chisel sounding keyboard line that doesn't outstay its welcome, before a second chorus, which employs a key change, then a lead break, and then a bridge to die for. If you like First Day on the Run, another song with a sophisticated bridge, then you'll love this bridge even more.
What's the song about? Well, on first reading, it seems a bit of a negative counterpoint to good times coming. Futility is the abiding takeaway. I'm thinking, he says. He hasn't come to a definitive conclusion, but consider this. We go slow, we get pulled over by the cops. We go fast, we get pulled over by the cops. You just can't win. Next up, track 6. Bit of a rave up. One of the Girls. It really stands out. The first cynical song since Insert Your Life, the opener. A song of revelry? Of sisterhood? The song is most notable for Ted sharing lead duties with Coxie in a little section of call and response. The script? Beverly Hills Cop.
Well, it's a point of fact.
What's that?
This fact.
You will.
Yeah, but now I'm back.
With Bill, and you is you.
You away from me.
You've changed.
You can say that again.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, one of the girls.
The song was played semi-regularly in the early to mid-2000s. Maybe you prefer others. I do. Track 7 is the gorgeous LA 86.
In Freefall. Although it's not called that on the album. There's some homework for ya. This song is another delicious serving of nostalgia-pop. Subtype, imagined nostalgia-pop. Because Coxie has, at the time of writing, never been to the US of A. LA 86 is very, very mood adjacent to Unsafe at Any Speed. Maybe One of the Girls is best described as a shit sandwich between two exquisite numbers. The song was described perhaps most accurately and eloquently in a review in Beat magazine. Quote, "A celebration in musical euphoria is delivered in a mid-album climax. Beginning with a dreamy introduction reminiscent of Fleetwood Mac's Sarah, this song blossoms into a Brian Wilson-esque song, a giant hug of a melody, complete with ooh harmonies.
Go ahead and say what you gonna say anyway. I don't know what for. I don't wanna be lonely anymore. Anymore."
So, pause for breath, look back, an almost flawless seven-track run. We've rocked out to Insert Your Life, then got the cigarette lighters out for Good Times and Yo-Yo Craze. Maybe had a little look at ourselves, a little sniffle, before a little light shimmying to Ticket to the Big Time. Then either sung along or listened intently to the majesty of Unsafe at Any Speed and LA 86. Now, what about a dance? Hot Nairobi Nights, destined to become a live favourite, a mainstay of sets from the mid-2000s until today.
Remember those hot Nairobi nights, a certain menace in the air, all right, as we took the back streets to the discotheque. Trance and house hadn't happened yet. Dripping with sexy African sweat.
Lyrically, Nairobi Nights is the best exemplifier of the fact that Footage Missing is the quintessential Australian expat album. The previous two albums were chock-a-block with Australian references, this record, by contrast, has plentiful references to overseas locales. Frankfurt, Left Bank, Nairobi, Los Angeles. Coxie confessed to journalist Glenn Peters it was all pure escapism. Quote, "As soon as I put down the guitar, there's a pile of dishes to do, or I have to go out and walk the dog, so, yes, I guess it's a way of living out fantasies."
Hot Nairobi nights, hot Nairobi nights.
Men sahibs of all generations would give up their day job for this groovy disco anthem.
Hot Nairobi nights.
We'll be right back. the song is over before you want it to be. Landing us in the hands of Doctor's second tune, Wendy. A plaintive number and a nice addendum to Yo-Yo Craze. There is, however, no skerrick of humour here. No refuge in nostalgic metaphor.
Wendy is in love with him. She's gone. Oh, Wendy is in love with him. She's gone.
Along with One of the Girls, it might be one of the most divisive songs on the album. But if it's corny, well, sir, then corn this narrator up.
There's a thing called happiness, and there's a thing that people call denial. I think it's gonna rain here. I hope it's gonna rain here just before.
Redemption Through Rain is a little hackneyed, but married with a beautiful singing voice and maudlin melody, it goes down fine.
In love with him, she's gone. Oh, Wendy is in love with him, she's gone.
Fancy a double shot of Doctor? Well, the next track is The Finest Choice, an outstanding pop confection. Lyrically, what it boils down to essentially is an ultimatum, but delivered so smoothly.
It's not the feeling I'm after. Yeah, you change this into something new, and all I really want is the truth.
The singer is against either A, being dumped, or B, getting knocked back after trying to push the relationship out of the friendship zone. Before that was a toxic manosphere concept. Did the protagonist really just bump into the mother? Did he really just have a mixtape at hand? It's probably all contained in the last line. And I wish that I just met you, turned around and kiss you for the first time. I should have gone for lover over friend at the beginning. As it stands, it's a complete mirror to Dance Troupe. If I could turn this back, I'd just dance with my arms around you. One reviewer described The Finest Choice as having a cool retro Californian groove behind it. As for the Choo Choo Choo's chorus, quote, Leonard's children are particularly fond of this because they think the song is about a train. Oh, the woe, the Fauves are even misunderstood by their offspring. Quite emotive songs from the Doctor, and in a row. This fact alone should register in the listener a noticeable lyrical shift from Thousand Yard Stare. A lot more first personal plural, we. Found us in free fall, we've been running for too long, maybe we are unsafe at any speed. And light on obvious professionals. No astronauts, no TV entertainers, no stockbrokers, no prison escapees. We briefly consider faded musicians in LA 86 and possibly ascendant ones in Ticket to the Big Time, but that's about it. The exception that proves the rule, of course, is contained on the one song on the album that is all about employment, and that song is called Phasing You In. The song was described by Coxie on Alive at the Wireless as a Kafkaesque dissertation on the vagaries of employment.
That sort of thing, you earn your money, but for now we're phasing you in.
The listener is tantalizingly kept in the dark about what the job actually is. The position seems vaguely sales related and less vaguely illicit. Perhaps the most elusive question, however, is, will it be enjoyable? Will there be good times coming? And in a cubicle or a Fishwick warehouse? The song is one of your humble narrator's favourite songs off the album, but it does seem to be another divisive number. You be the judge. Next up is Chaos and Dance. This song is, in many ways, the brash, sleazy cousin to Hot Nairobi Nights. Coxie told Street Press, quote, "I wanted it to be abrasive. I wanted to ruffle a few feathers and be obnoxious. Once again, I was just wanting to be something that I'm not."
There were discos in Berlin where they wouldn't let us in, till the balls were slapping against our chins. We were flirts, brown shirt, experts, Frankfurt was our undoing. Regrets we had a few of them.
We wouldn't expect anything less. Want to chortle or tee-hee like a schoolboy? We were nuts. Sluts, butt boys, fuck slaves. A general malaise infected all of our days. Abby Titmouse.
Soldiers, cultures, blowjobs, and vultures. Chaos and dance. Chaos and dance. Chaos and dance.
Chaos and dance.
Have you got those disgusting images out of your head? Because we now come to the final track. Perhaps the most perfectly selected album closer in the Fauves catalogue, Right Wing Fags.
Yeah, you've been moving out since Monday, and I've been walking around the house like I'm a guest, and the things you said on Sunday, well, you might as well go give yourself that kiss. You don't know me, you don't know me a thing. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this again. Whoa. Yeah, well, I thought you might be a liberal. I didn't see the one nation thing coming, and I still don't have the answer. It's gonna take a little time to sink in. You disown me, I'll disown you, my friend. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this in life. It's not easy to find this again. Whoa. You are a right-wing fuck with a right-wing dad and a right-wing mother smoking right-wing fags. You worked hard in the boardroom, worked my ass off in the bedroom, and first time that I mention it, you're gone. You're gone.
The song speaks for itself, but as usual, Coxie is very illuminating. Quote, "Doctor is one of the country's great undiscovered geniuses. What can I say? I love it." You know, these days, people put their best songs up front. You have no faith that people will get to the end of a record, and we've always tried to put a song that closes the record out well, not the worst song at the end. You get a bit hurt by that. I think we have some great last songs on our records, but whenever people call out from them at gigs, you know that 90% of people didn't get that far into the record. It's kind of a bittersweet thing. In actuality, the song has remained an evergreen in the Fove set list and has many, many devotees. Lyrically, Right Wing Fags brings the album full circle. Insert Your Life began the album cramming people into boxes and stereotypes. A deductive copywriter appealing to an audience based on their very, very broad belonging to social groups. The protagonist of Right Wing Fags has potentially induced a political affiliation from what might have been an offhand, provocative statement made during a domestic argument. Maybe she just said she loved Pauline to get a rise out of him. The song works on so many levels. For Fovesologist, there is also the tantalizing opportunity to consider three unusually romantic Doctor songs, Finest Choice, Wendy, Right Wing, as a rock opera detailing the rise and fall of a romantic couple. Musically, the song allows the album to end with singer-songwriter poise and gravitas. The song has an unsophisticated but infectious chorus that hits you between the eyes. And what more could you ask of an album closer? The band must have been confident they had a powerful album in the can. The equal, if not the better, of A Thousand Yard Stare. But how would it be received? And how best to market it? Were they a bit old hat now in the age of Motor Ace, John Butler? Grinspoon were now powerfully all in their mid-20s. How would they market the album? How would you describe the Fovs? By May 2002, their insurer, Allianz, still had them categorized as a dance band. Fair enough, perhaps, with songs like Chaos and Dance and Hot Nairobi Nights soon to be released on disc. Around April 2000, a track pulled from the upcoming album, Good Times Coming, was released as a single. Sort of. Some 500 copies of Good Times Coming were printed up in a jewel case. A putative video clip was filmed of the boys with a belly dancer somewhere in Sydney. But for some reason, the single was pulled. When interviewed in 2022, Dave Williams' only memory was that even by 2002, singles were largely loss-leading for the Shock label. Dave Williams, Shock Records.
You know, it was down to the band with what they wanted to do. If the band wanted to do something, then we would go okay. So, I mean, with things like single choices, I would have probably been, you know, suggesting that a track may be better than another to release as a single.
Time's coming, though. The single was apparently going to be released, but never was. Do you know if that was ever pressed, or was it just nixed from the beginning?
I wouldn't know. I honestly could not remember. I don't think that it was. I don't know. I mean,
I want a copy. I've seen the cover, but I want a copy.
Okay. We quite often at that time were producing singles mainly for radio. The thing with a CD single at the time, as opposed to, say, a mini album, but certainly a CD single, is that they were really loss leaders. You were effectively manufacturing cost greater than what you were selling them for. So there wasn't a lot of sense in trying to sell a whole heap of singles. The band would always have to come up with extra tracks to put on the B-sides, which meant costs of recording.
Unless you're Scandalous or Bardo, it's not really much point.
Yeah, no. And I mean, but the thing is that you still needed to highlight a track. So we would quite often do a CD single and maybe only do enough to present it to radio.
And the Foes were largely considered an album band by this point. It would be the last ever Fove single. Shred, issue 6, was released sometime in May 2002. It would be the longest edition yet. It would also, at time of writing, be the last one ever.
You have said you wish you could destroy every copy ever made once. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I don't like. I mean, look, I took it off. It was on our website for a long time. I ended up taking, like, I got heaps of copies still. I told people that I didn't have copies of volumes 1 and 2, but I do have. Well, I mean, I could photocopy them. I've got the masters of them, but yeah, I don't know. It's just a different time. I don't want that to represent our band now. Like, I mean, it was just of its time. So, you know, if somebody comes to it new and picks it up now, and it's just so out of date, and
yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't really want it out there. But, I mean, obviously people have got copies, and it was something at the time. Like, I put a lot of work into it. Doctor and Doug certainly helped on the first one, but after that, probably the first two, I think they contributed, but after that they didn't do anything. I did it all. So, and it got progressively bigger, like, in terms of word count. Like, the last two were kind of mini, little novellas, really. There's so much went into them. But yeah, if I was to look at it now, there's just stuff that's just too cringy. So we stopped selling it.
Shred had become quite infamous over its 8-year run. One suspects scores of people read the zine that didn't even listen to or know the Foves. Coxie. After losing our major label backing, it became apparent that Shred would need to raise public funds if it had any chance of survival. The free postage, courtesy of a generous record label, was now over, and we were back to paying our own way. Now, we have to charge $5.50 for back copies. It would be missed by many. But not to worry, the website foves.com would debut later in the year, and Coxie would do a similar thing with his My Say segments. Shred was often a mirror into the conscious and unconscious existential concerns of its, by now, sole author, Andrew Ian Cox. The final issue contained, unexpectedly, some utilitarian laments and belied his more than minor concerns about advancing age. None better exemplified than these paragraphs on Robert Fripp. If I was starting a band today, I'd have a guitarist that sits down. When did you last see John Williams standing up with a foot up on the fallback wedge? Sitting down implies a credibility that simply cannot be acquired while performing on 2 feet. Think Ben Harper and John Butler, mediocre talents at best, whose careers have benefited enormously by their canny decision to sit down and appear serious. Annoying slide guitar playing takes on a luminescent quality the moment the seat of your pants is polishing a chair. Prosaic acoustic parts suddenly appear more important than Jesus's Sermon on the Mount as soon as the artist's butt cheeks are splayed across a padded seat. Over its 6 issues, passages in shreds had often been early clues to the new direction. The heading Light and Frothy is used in a mini article about a 2-minute spot on radio with an airhead comedy duo. A more hurtful extemporizing of I'm Not Approachable is detailed about smashing unsolicited CDs, and the words chaos and dance are used in one little piece. With song order settled, the album was then mixed. Discussing the album's title, Coxey said, "As you get older, someone may be relating a story from the past, and suddenly there's a blank. That happens a lot with us when we are crapping on. Footage missing refers to that blank spot in your memory. I don't know where it went."
What about the artwork? Very simple, effective. Did he come up with that, Doug? He sort of, or did Shock do that? Or
Shock did it, yeah. Although actually, when I think of it, no, they did. Every cover's got some connection to Doug, and this was done by an art student of Doug's mum.
All right.
Yeah. So.
A long tradition of that. Matt Davidson,
Of either students of his mum or his sister. Yeah, they're all, pretty much every record cover has got some newy connection. So, it was a student of his mum's, yeah.
On the 16th of August, the band launched Footage Missing at the Corner Hotel in Melbourne. Speaking to Pete Madsen in August 2002, Coxey described the new release as our most mellow record yet. Ted took rare interview duty on the eve of the launch. Speaking to Sarah Napier, he declared Footage Missing a well-balanced pop album and attributed its form to the purple patch of songs Coxey and Doctor had amassed prior to its recording. He reflected that the new album had only a little bit of keyboards to spice it up, along with an increased focus on vocals and harmonies this time around. Ted conceded that many may have erroneously misinterpreted Thousand Yard Stare as the new direction into faux techno, but that the album was just a one-off experimentation. The interview then moved to the Fauves' horizons. The bass player was quick to rally for the band's future, Ted said. "None of us are millionaires, but that's not really the point. We'll be together for another 14 years. They'll be wheeling us out on stretchers." Although an understandable bugbear of Coxey, Ted credited the band's jokey nature for keeping them together. Ted said, "Once you start believing your own bullshit, that's usually when lots of bands implode. When they haven't made it, they throw up their hands and say, 'Why bother? We're too dumb to figure that all out.' We're like, so what's the new album going to be?" Ted ended the interview fondly referencing the old days of drinking hijinks with bands like Custard, before throwing just a little shade onto Motor Race. I couldn't imagine Patrick ripping the hell out of a band room or thrashing the hotel room or butting his ciggies out on the carpet. On the 16th of August, the band launched the album at the Corner Hotel in Melbourne. Your humble narrator has not seen the contemporaneous Rolling Stones Australia review of Footage Missing. They were normally 3.5-star affairs anyway. Glenn Peters of Beat Magazine wrote, "The Fauves have a new album out called Footage Missing, and true to form, it's brilliant." When Impress Magazine came to review the album, the journalists started off their piece with a little Fauves pity party summary, rather than immediately appraising the new work at hand. Quote, "It's a mark of a band's unique personality that it takes you a while to get it. With many of the finer things in life, an acquired taste is usually a more revelatory and lasting one. I put the long-struggling Fauves in this, oh, I get it, acquired taste basket. Nearing as they are their 10th anniversary, sick, of apparently more setbacks and disappointments than triumphs, it's both gratifying and a little marvellous that the Fauves' trademark humour and boisterousness sings through once more on this new album. Oh boy." Now, this podcast has spent much time exploring the humour in the Fauves' oeuvre, sometimes lamenting it, sometimes admiring it. But Footage Missing must be, on balance, the least humorous of any Fauves' release up until this point in their history. The reviewer continued their attention on the noise rather than the signal. Sure, it's probably a dangerously thin cushion preventing the bubbling resentment and bitterness from spewing forth over we fearful public. But that's just conjecture. Yes, journalist, it was. Again, there is no song on this album that could by any metric be called bitter or resentful. It is in fact in places assuredly sincere and heartfelt. True, Insert Your Life is cynical, and Chaos and Dance and One of the Girls both enter different levels of sleazy, but these small examples do not extra bitter make. Now, street press reviewers, to be fair, may only have got a few hours with an album before their deadlines. But how about a little less of how the Fauves were social disasters and more musical merits discussion? To quote Regurgitator, "Us listeners are here for the music because it sounds wicked, lyric plus melody, but I can't pick it. Concentrate on the music first. Leave the nasal gave stuff to neckbeard podcasters like us, please." Finally, they get to the meat of Footage Missing. "The musical mood of Footage Missing is powerfully uplifting. Yes. Robust melodies, yes. And the inimitable voice of Andrew Cock. Yes, yes, yes. You should have led with that."
Any memories of the launch, which I think was at the Everlet? Was that right? I was there at a gig around the time the album came out.
Okay, yeah, nah.
No memory? Where was it?
I cannot remember the launch.
This was at the time when you forgot you'd given up remembering or celebrating launches, I guess.
Yeah, except I've got this, I'm just looking at my spreadsheets now where I have all the gigs we've ever played. The Evelyn, on the 24th of May, we played at the Evelyn.
Uh-huh.
I haven't written here that it was the launch, but it may have been the launch, yeah.
Do you write little notes like, good gig, got spat on?
No, but I often write who we played it with, like who we've got.
Well, the Cants, yeah? The Cants? The Cunts or something?
They were on the bill, were they?
There was someone in the Evelyn maybe 2003 or 4 called the Cants.
Yeah, I remember that name. I can't remember who, yeah. I'm looking here. A week later, we were at the Annandale in Sydney, so it probably was the launch if we were going to Sydney. And then another week later, we were in Adelaide. So yeah, it would have been for the Footage Missing tour, such as it was, definitely. Yeah.
A Street Press reviewer felt their first article on the Fauves was a bit harsh and issued a short part retraction. The Fauves are not to be pitied, nor admired, just simply enjoyed. Footage Missing is an album pregnant with plump pop that should take on superhero personality in live performance. It's always a treat to see the band smiling and sweating on stage, sharing their raison d'être with those gloriously at their feet. Dominic Van Abbey.
This came out at a time when I'd kind of lost track a little bit of what was happening with the Fauves. I wasn't yet a rusted on fan at that point in time. I had a few of their albums, but I have to say that I was still very much listening to what was happening on Triple J at that point in time. And this album had a bit of a more mature, more melodic, more tune-based Fauves sound that kind of set the blueprint for pretty much most of what came after it. And that led to them being dropped by Triple J. Nothing that I recall from Footage Missing was played on Triple J, and certainly nothing that came after it. So I kind of lost track a little bit of what was happening with the Fauves, and it wasn't until a few years later when I was up at Dixon's Records, the renowned record recycling shop in Blackburn. And someone had obviously come in quite recently and traded in their entire Fauves collection, because there in the F section was a lot of Fauves albums. And I picked up Footage Missing and along with that the self-titled album. Went home, listened to them, and they resonated with me. And from that point onwards, I was a rusted on Fauves fan, and they became one of those bands where I would thereafter buy stuff sight unheard. As I said, Footage Missing introduces a more melodic, more kind of acoustic-driven Fauves sound. They'd shifted away from the dissonant chords, the loud Wayne Connolly mosh pit-friendly sort of sound. They'd kind of started that a little bit with songs like Charles Atlas Way, with a little bit of more tune-based sound. They'd then taken a fair right turn with Thousand Yard Stare, where they'd started tinkering around with synthesizers and vocoders and whatnot, and expanding their sonic palette, which I enjoyed. But this album was much more of a back to basic sound. They'd largely moved away from the keyboards and reverted back to a guitar, bass, drums kind of setup. And as I said, it was a lot quieter than what Triple J had become accustomed to, and didn't get a lot of airplay, and kind of cost the Fauves a lot of their audience. I think the airwaves at the time were probably, as far as Australian bands goes, was being dominated by things like Powderfinger, Jebediah, Regurgitator, and the Fauves introducing a more melodic sound was kind of a little bit out of sync with that, not for the first or last time in the Fauves' career. And the album, outside of Fauves fans, went very much unnoticed. I like it. I like a lot of it. Yeah, Footage Missing.
Oz Rock Rated Podcast, The Pettit Brothers.
Well, my number two is Footage Missing.
What am I missing about this?
Well, let me see. What have I got in my notes?
Maybe I haven't listened to this one enough. It could be. I do admit that it was one that I kind of... I don't know. Maybe it wasn't...
It's a little bit of a difficult listen. Not as much as some of the other ones, but yeah, this is a real rewarding album.
Right.
Let me see what I've got in my notes. This, to me, has got the best mix of all the Fauves styles, like the melodies, the riffs, the weirdness, the imagery... this would be like a Fauves compilation album.
Right. So if this was for the uninitiated, this would be the one you'd say here.
No, definitely not.
This would be the one that for the hard. Well, you're a hardcore fan than me, so this explains it.
It's a little. It takes some work, but man, it's so rewarding. There's not a track on this that I would skip. And that's, and there's only two albums in their whole catalogue where that's true, and they're my number one and two.
Right.
It's good. The first song, Insert Your Life, is amazing. I love that song so much. But then it just, it kind of accelerates from there and just gets better and better and better until you get to track 13, which is called, unfortunately, Right Wing Fags. But it's not about, it's about smokes.
Oh.
Yeah, so they probably could. And on the on Spotify, you'll notice that it's called Right Wing Fangs.
Oh, so hopefully they don't. Well, they won't get cancelled for that.
No, well, it's too late now. This was 2002. They released it, but they were talking about fags in the sense of having a smoke.
Yeah, right.
Which is what it used to mean.
On the 2nd of November 2002, the band played a double set at the Hi-Fi Bar in Melbourne.
It's been good.
The first bracket contained the current working set list. The second set was to contain the deep cuts. The reason? They were attempting to record a live album. The band repeated the event up in Sydney the following week. Your humble narrator did not attend the hi-fi gig, to his eternal regret. He felt satiated having seen them play the previous month on the 14th of November at the National Hotel in Geelong.
The hi-fi bar set, you did two sets, and do you remember you pulled out a whole lot of old songs? I wasn't there, but Michael filmed that. Do you have any great memories of that night, or what was the impetus behind that? You just want to rule some songs?
Was that called, was that called Double Live?
Is that I think so.
Yeah. It was partly because David Williams at Shock wanted us to record a live album. And he had a guy who used to work at who used to do a lot of the live at the Wirelesses at the ABC. He recorded us at Meredith and this night. And this night we were so bad the recordings were just basically unusable. So after that, Williams pretty much, we were never really into the idea of doing a live album, and he just didn't want to throw any more good money after his bad money, and he ditched the idea after that. But I just remember getting off, doing the two sets and having the interval in the middle, and like Ted sunk like best part of a bottle of white wine in the interval. And it was just a rabble in the second part of the show, like an absolute disgrace. And I think Jack might have got up at the end and played a couple of songs. It was just a shock.
Oh, yeah.
It was just one of our worst ever gigs. Like, just awful. Yeah. So it would have been the second set was, I suppose that was, in inverted commas, the hits that we were going to record for the live album. And so we probably felt, we were playing these sort of so-called radio songs in the second part. So in the first part, we'll indulge ourselves. But whenever we play a song, a set heavy on songs that we don't play very much, I'm sort of thinking like when we did our launch for Driveway Heart Attack, we played a lot of songs we haven't. They're just always bad gigs because, we're just never quite well enough rehearsed, and everyone's uptight about stuffing up the songs. And so, yeah, this gig, that double live gig at Hi-Fi was just, it's one of those ones that still occasionally gets brought up. And it's like, that was just terrible.
It was well attended, wasn't it?
There was probably 300 there. So we're in the fading years of being able to pull that many people. But yeah, I don't think that, they would have left pretty dissatisfied. Like it was, we were a rabble. We were really bad.
Wait a second, you're not doing another one, are you, Doctor? Now you write the sets, make the whole world sick.
Jack Dyer, Fove's bass player, 1988 to 1999.
The next time, I think 2002, the Hi-Fi, you joined the band for a few songs, yeah?
Yeah, it was the Hi-Fi.
Okay? Was that awkward? Was that all right?
No, look, mate, the Fove's ended, as far as I'm concerned, in 2000. But I, you know, so I just said, listen, I still want to, you know how you guys are going, and you know, be part of whatever I can and whatever. And I'd moved up to Cairns, and I think, I'm not sure I came back from Cairns at that point for a bit or whatever, but you know, I sort of reached out to Coxie and said, look, you know, can I come and, you know, I had to ask the question, you know, can I come and do a song or two? It's a bit of a cameo. And that wasn't a problem. So, yeah, I came in, I think I did Dogs and might have been Self-Abuser, I think. So getting on stage again was awesome.
Yep.
You know, even though it was only two years. And the crowd loved it, and it was just, yeah, it was fun. So not awkward, no, because, you know, I was just sort of very grateful that they let me do it.
Yeah,
so we had this residual guilt, and it's like, but at the same time, it's like...
You're like Dave Mustaine rolling up to a Metallica gig going, oh, you mind if I sit in on a few tunes?
Yeah, you know, but at the same time also, you've got Ted who's, he's in the Fives, and you're going, oh, Ted, yeah, can you just step, Jack wants to do a couple of songs. It's just like... It was horrible.
If you don't mind, mate. No, I remember doing it at the Hi-Fi, one of the shows we played there. Richie Robinson's out on front of house, and I remember going, yeah, cool, no worries. And he did the encore, I think it was Dogs. And
it was. I know, three people.
I remember going out into the audience to watch it. I'm like, looking at Richie, going, this seems pretty average, dude.
I don't think it was a great gig, those two shows.
You fuckers worked that out or what?
Nathan Jolly, Listen Carefully podcast.
When you look back at the entire discography, do you see it in kind of stylistic chunks, I suppose, album to album, or do you just see it as like a big run of songs?
I sort of see companion albums, I think. Like, I see 1,000 Yards Stare and Footage Missing, I see as real companions. They are both the two albums where we made probably the most use of keyboards. Yeah, so that's kind of how I see our discography generally. I feel like, yeah, it has, when I look back on it, and it's not like it was something probably intentional, but I feel like, yeah, we did go through phases where the two records in each of those kind of eras do sort of sit really, really well with each other.
If a Fauves fan had liked 1,000 Yard Stare, they could quite easily stay the course for Footage Missing. It wasn't a huge stretch. Conversely, if they had found 1,000 Yard disorientating, their fears would not have been settled by Footage Missing, even if they had heard it on Triple J.
Footage Missing, 1,500 copies, yeah? So less than half of 1,000 Yard, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. Where'd you get that figure from?
From you, I think.
Okay, I thought it was a couple of thousand.
Probably no average.
Yeah, I don't know. We never got figures. So
no stats for sure.
No idea.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he was bummed out if his album sales weren't too good, you know? I just figured a guy like him would be like, yeah, whatever, you know?
I thought so too. No, when we talked about that, this was a very serious conversation. He says, "Well, I don't understand why
Powderfinger
sells 6 million records, and no matter what I do, I can only sell a million records."
And he's ready to walk away.
I'm thinking, why does he care? He's
the Fauves.
But I try to explain this. Come on, man! If these people craft hit singles, they're not writing.
It's not 74 anymore.
You're a poet, right? They craft hit singles like they're almost jingles, and they put hooks in them and they overdub and they're 6 months in the studio. You pull a mobile truck up to a dentist's office and go in there, and 2 weeks later, an album comes out. But it's great. It's a great
Fauves.
An album, because you work fast. You don't need all that stuff. You're not writing for the radio. You're not writing hit singles. So, you know, your music is a certain amount is an acquired taste. I mean, you're a poet.
This podcast has said it all before. But the Fauves were incredibly lucky to have found shock and maintained continuity of releases. For in an age of physical, hard plastic media, self-release was simply not an option for many bands, certainly none as modest as the Fauves. Getting CDs into shops in any meaningful quantity back in 2002 was nigh on impossible unless you had a lot of backing behind you. Online sales then were just not a thing, in Australia at least. And this was still a good year before even MySpace was up and running. The group had, however, a record label, and perhaps most importantly, were on the Premier Artists roster. On 16 November, the boys played at the Commercial Hotel in Horsham. This was their first gig in the Western Victorian town since early 1998, when they played at the Sound Shell. You'll never know where or when you gain new fans.
Yeah, g'day. This is Mark here just to talk about the Fauves. Yeah, just saw them many times over the years at various gigs. They also played another time in Horsham. I wasn't there. It was the night of my 21st birthday, which I was in Melbourne, but the Fauves played in Horsham at the Commercial Hotel, and my younger brother's band, which I think were called Sound As Ever at the time, they were like rehearsing in the rehearsal room in Horsham out the back of the pub, and I think the band was post show. The band was staying above the pub, and you know it must have been 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that, or maybe even later. And the band was trying to sleep in their accommodation. They couldn't get to sleep because of some band making a hell of a racket downstairs, and it ended up being, you know, my younger brother's band. And I think Coxie wrote about this on, you know, some Fauves website in his journals. But I think Teddy was the bass player at the time, and he went down to try and tell this band of youngsters to shut the hell up. And anyway, the rest of the band made their way down there for lack of anything better to do in Horsham, which is a harsh fact. But there just is nothing better to do at 2 o'clock in the morning. But from what I understand, maybe Coxie and Dougie got up and had a jam with the 15-year-old kids who were, you know, drunk on their red wine from their parents' liquor cabinet. But I think they did a cover of the Fauves classic, Everybody's Getting a Three-Piece Together, which reading about it in Coxie's journal, it sounded like it was a great moment in the history of rock. Unfortunately, I wasn't there because it was my 21st birthday and I was probably drinking shots of absinthe somewhere in a bar in Brunswick. But, you know, that's a tale for another time.
The band ended the year on 28 December at Tarwin Lower, way down on Wilson's Promontory. One wonders whether Ramo had any more details on the angry neighbour that had objected to their stay at the holiday house at the start of the year.
Listen to this album, you country bumpkin. How do you like them apples? Listen to this.
And it's the 20th anniversary of Footage Missing. I think, yeah, 2002.
What are we? What year is 2022?
22, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, geez, it is the 20th anniversary.
I had to point it out. It's gone so quick.
I'd love to see you do every song on that. I'd love to see Ticket to the Big Time again.
Yeah, that look, you know, of all of our records, in a way, that's almost the most feasible. I'm just trying to think. There's barely a song. I think we would know how to play every song on it, almost.
One of the Girls might be difficult.
Yeah, we have done it before. I can remember how it goes.
You have, yeah.
Okay.
And we have done that a couple of times.
Chaos and Dance?
That's only got two chords. That's so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've played every... That's probably one of the rare records where we have, at some point, played every song on it live at some point. So, yeah, we could do that. That's quite feasible, yeah.
No Secret, that's my favourite album of yours. I think Michael's is Nervous Flashlights, generally.
Yeah, Nervous Flashlights are... up there, yeah, for sure. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, cool, yeah.
By the end of 2002, the band had done 41 gigs, about the same as the previous year. They were now rapidly approaching their 15th anniversary. How did they assess their prospects from this vantage point? Surely the very word prospects was in the rearview mirror by this stage. However, they'd replaced a foundational member and not only survived the cauterization intact, but had felt a breath of fresh air. They'd even realized their most ambitious album to date. Footage Missing had been a mature and polished sonic affair that any band should have been more than proud of. Would they now effect a left-hand turn and head into a more raw direction? And would it be their own decision to make?
I just need to say at this point, I don't think we're going to have time to do Footage Missing.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Good. Well, what are we up? Right. We're nearly up to 3 hours, so I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can go.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
How much time do you have? Just 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, we're probably.
I'm tired.
Time flies, but yeah, we probably need to wrap it up if that's okay. Because
thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No, not at all. Thank you guys for the time. Yeah, but yeah, 3 hours. I'm probably sick of the sound of my own voice.
On the next episode, we'll move further along into the middle Howard years to see how the Foves fare in an era of full Australian Idol, full War on Terror, and full mutual obligation for the Dole. Will Ted reach the ripe old age of 40? Will Doug get married? Will Doctor still be working in a Rose hothouse? And will our bachelor coxman finally break his seal? Foves Are the Best People will be back after reviewing each and every Footage Missing track. Bye!
A lot of the problems that other artists hit later on, to hit a career slump and have a comeback and try and have a second act and try and deal with all the problems of what does it mean to be a rock star in your 30s and 40s.
Horsham is Orsham. The Foves.
The quintessence of a band that starts and starts again and starts again. No success is big enough for them. No failure is small enough for them. They can always move on.
Every single album we think is going to be the breakthrough album where, you know, the world finally gets wise.
And his Toyota Tarago.
Breakthrough design.
Magic Toyota Tarago. Beyond a car, beyond a van, beyond a wagon.
Beyond anything on wheels.
Get the feeling of Tarago's aerodynamics, cruise control, coil spring rear suspension, and design that pleases even Ben Lexon.
Somebody did it right again.
Tarago.
They're getting off their heads in the van.
Tarago.
Used to mean something. Now it means shit.